sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
We choose directly who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you hear an introduction or did I have my mic turned off? I'm sorry. Anyway,
no,
if you didn't...
I heard intro, but.
Okay, good deal. Well, we're visiting with Joshua Shapiro tonight, and say hello, Joshua, and then we'll turn things over to Mark for a few minutes.
Hello. A great honor and privilege to be on your show once again. Like you said in the. Before we started, it's been like 7 or 8 years, and I'm glad to see that you're continuing to do this sacred work.
Well, we appreciate it. It's a baby. Requires constant care. But Mark, the Badger, gonna give you a reading, and we'll. I know you probably had other readings before, but not like this one. Anyway, here's the Badger.
Well, we looked up and we're going a little bit more with the evening part, since you're born in the evening of the reading. And looking at from that point, your birth sign and traditional Mayan day count would be a day called 10 Reed. And it's in the con cycle, which that would relate to the Pleiades star system, actually. This particular day is part of the, in the Mayan tradition, what they call the eight bats, daykeeper initiation ceremonies. And so it's about, has energy having to do with creativity and flowing of things. A lot of things having to do with the authority, especially things of authority regarding the Earth itself, and also over personal spaces. You know, so a lot, the reed glyph is also connected a lot of times to the staff, like a Mayan staff. Can be considered like a reed. And, of course, all the things in the Mayan things about the place of the reeds where they had a lot of the cities would be named after that, Tula, Talon, or something like that. So a lot of connections in there to both the Pleiades and also a little bit more on the advanced side of the Mayan daykeeping stuff, you know, near birth. So you could actually probably just pick up and be a daykeeper yourself. You'd probably fit right in. Now, remember we said we were going to do two Zulkans before?
Uh-huh.
So we're switching gears now. We'll be going into the second one. It actually is going to have three components: a forward flow of time, a backward flow of time, and where the two time flows come together and unite, creating like a bridge, a doorway, or a zero point. So we'll do the forward flow here of time. And it's on a day 6 Ock, and that exists in the current Mayan calendar. So it's not too much different, really. It has to do with, dog energy, loyalty, love, good virtues, and all that stuff. It's partnering with the Ik glyph of breath and spirit, communication, prayer, and stuff like that. And it's sitting in a cycle, the semi-cycle, which is in the Mayan Zulkan, that's the skull cycle. So that would obviously fit in with the whole thing with the crystal skulls.
Yeah.
And what it's doing is it's combining the thing with the crystal skulls, the Ik spirit energy and communication, and also the Ok energy, which would also be the dog of the underworld, Xoatl, that's the partner of Quetzalcoatl. So that would show things, you know, like those crystal skulls, spirit, and dogs moving through the underworld. And it has an aspect here of community and cooperation within a community as a bigger part of this energy to this. So now going to the other flow of time, the backward flow. So the one we just talked about was more the forward flow, the way we normally view time. Looking at the backward flow, this is stuff that may have been showing up in your life. Say, you know, usually we go around year, somewhere around near 1997, 98, somewhere in there and after, as becoming more, you know, stronger or prevalent characteristics or something perhaps in your life. And it's got a day number that's associated with light, especially a spiraling radial form of light. Or what the Russians would call torsion energy, or we'd call it subtle energy, or, you know, there's all kinds of chi or quantum energy, or, you know, different photonic energy. Some people might say it's that, so there's different ways to label it. But that's a big aspect here of light, and it's working with things about kind of planning things, focusing things in awareness, and bringing in aspects of art and grace and creating things. And it has a sitting in a cycle that's about basically a purpose and intention. So those are a bigger part of this. And then a next level up, it's about forming things, bringing things into dimensionality. So a lot about here about creating things, using light and using intention and willpower and that, and manifesting things, I guess, in short, right? A lot about that, especially things that have to do with awareness of people would be a big part. It's also connecting back into that the con energy that typically a lot of times we see that relates to, again, the star system of the Pleiades. So this is, there might be some things in recent years, some new stuff that's come your way concerning the Pleiades, and may even be things that go back and connect you personally into that particular star system, you know, perhaps even before you showed up here on Earth. And you may be, I would not be surprised with this if you've been kind of solidifying or getting, I don't know, that they're probably not new. Some of it may seem new, but there's connections here that probably were already there that have been getting stronger, as of the way I'm seeing it. And especially probably going to be guiding you a lot on, like I said, forming things in dimensionality through intent and how light works in creation. I wouldn't be surprised if you've been learning a lot about that kind of stuff and getting some guidance, you know, probably primarily from the Pleiades. Now, where these two time flows come together, so on one hand we got the Pleiades and light and learning intention, on the other hand we got the spirit prayer and a dog of the underworld and the skull energy coming together. And when they do this, they are bringing in a energy that has to do with the purpose and the will, power. Again, this thing about dimensionality of form and bringing things into form. But in this part of it, it's also linking to Hu-Nebku. So it's pulling in that. And it's also connecting back into that Ok, the dog energy, dog of the underworld. And the thing about the radial spiraling light is also showing up here again. And this particular glyph is green in color, so it's a new glyph, and it's the green color in the Mayan tradition would be the center of the medicine wheel. And it would be one of the colors, it's actually the only color that when in the Popol Vuh, they got a couple prayers in there, and that's the only color that they mention in those prayers. So they don't talk about the white, the black, yellow, or the red paths or roads. They only mention the green as they're moving through the underworld, going from one world cycle to the next. So that, what that seems, and we had your dog of the underworld showing up here, so that seems to be saying that, you know, your work with the crystal skulls type energy in the skull energy here, and the underworld and the dog of the underworld and the Pleiades, these things are all coming together. And that for you, it seems that has a lot of importance here in the recent past and in the future about how to bring things into dimensionality and actually create form from consciousness. So I wouldn't be surprised if you've been getting a lot of guidance and help and learning in that particular area. It seems to be showing up here a lot. So, and your intention is a big part of that. Purpose and intention and just willpower is really a driving force. So let me see if I can pull up something here and look at this couple of these other cycles here and see if I get any other information. A little bit of jaguar energy showing up here too. And that's connected back into the skull. Mm-hmm. So in the Mayan thing, you have Ischel, the rainbow jaguar lady. That would probably be a good connection for you. And then let me see this other cycle here. Yeah, jaguar showing up there again. And also all the things about peace. You know, peace is kind of a aspect of this dimensional forming and bringing things into creation. That'll be a component of it. That'll be important to consider. Mm-hmm. Let me see. The Hu-Nebku thing is showing up here again too. That's gonna bring in this for you. Bring in a lot of things about, harmony. How to bring things into harmony. So when you're sitting there using your intention, how things harmonize and how those spiraling light things harmonize with each other is going to be probably an important thing to pay attention to.
Okay.
And that's probably about it for now. Did that help you at all?
Yeah, it sounds interesting. Some aspects of it sound exactly like who I am and what my intentions are and what I feel inspired to do. So I thank you so much for this.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Outstanding. As usual, Mark pretty much nailed it. Here's a 60-second brief message. We'll be right back. Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now. And we're back, and we appreciate everybody's patronage to keep the program up and running. We've done it by the skin of our teeth for about 14 years. Anyway, back to Joshua. Joshua, where have you been for the last 7 years? And what did you do? And what are you going to do? That'll keep you busy for about an hour.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, let's see. About 7 years ago, I'm trying to remember because time has gone by so fast now. I think I was back in Europe. Let's see. I think the first time I talked with you, I was in Europe. I was in Holland. And I stayed there until about 2000 and early part of 2008. And then I came back to the U.S., and first I went to Chicago, which is where I was born, to reestablish myself in the U.S. And then kind of, just kind of follow spirit, did what I normally do, setting up presentations in different parts of the U.S. and about crystal skulls and so on. And then I'm trying to remember. Then I think also in 2008, this is when the Indiana Jones film came out, the last one, which had, of course, one main crystal skull in it. So that kind of changed my life a little bit because there was a lot of different media sources that contacted me. And actually, when the film came out, I was in Brazil. I was at a UFO conference where I was speaking. And so I got to watch the film in English with Portuguese subtitles. So that was kind of interesting. But at that UFO conference, I made contact with Jaime Musson, who is a well-known Mexican UFO researcher who also happens to have a couple of crystal skulls. So he was interested to talk with me at the conference, and as a result of his conversation with him in 2009, then I made my way into Mexico. First time going into Mexico seriously, looking at different crystal skulls, and I saw a number of crystal skulls I had never seen before, because related to the crystal skulls themselves, Mexico seems to be one of the key countries which many come out of. There are so many crystal skulls that come out of Mexico. Some people say they kick the ground and a crystal skull pops out. So it was interesting to meet with Jaime Musan, and then there was also a muralist whose name I've forgotten that I also met at the same time, who also had his own collection of crystal skulls, quite a few were gold skulls, but he did have a life-size clear quartz skull that was in. I wasn't allowed to share pictures of it when we returned to the U.S. But by the time I was making this trip to Mexico, 2009, I moved to Atlanta. And the reason I had gone to Atlanta was at the end of the prior year, I had visited, and it felt like I was finishing up in Chicago, and Atlanta seemed to be the next place for me to base out of. So, but of course, there's always reasons to go to different places, and I went to Atlanta because that's where Katrina was, who is, of course, my life partner right now. So basically, I met her in 2009, and we've pretty much been together since the spring of that year. Up until this year, we have been together every day, every minute, but this year I took a couple of trips, as you probably know, and I wasn't able to go with Katrina on these travels. So, but that's where I met her, and then we were in Atlanta for about a year, then we went and stayed with some Asheville, North Carolina, for about 4 months, and we took our first East Coast to West Coast journey. We traveled through the United States. We went up into Canada, headed over to Vancouver. That's when we passed through Washington State. And it was because of this trip in 2011 that we decided that we wanted to stay in, actually it was at the end of 2010 that we went through Washington, and we were going to California because there was a TV interview I was doing. It was for a program called The Truth About the Crystal Skulls, but I don't think they really covered the truth about the crystal skulls. Anyway, they included my interview. That was the early part of 2011, and then Katrina said she really liked Washington, so that's how we wound up here, and we pretty much have been in this area since. But, you know, periodically we get invited to travel to different parts in the U.S., and also in 2011 we went to Holland also for a conference. So, yeah, doing a lot of traveling, but up until this year, for about 3 years, haven't done too much traveling. So it seems to be starting up again, and there's another trip coming up in October to Belgium. So, you know, you just go with the flow of things, and when it's the right time, everything falls into place and you can do it. So crystal skulls have, you know, kept me pretty busy working on world peace meditations on the 13th of every month that we do, supporting Crystal Skull World Day, which happened last year for the first time on November 22nd. It will happen again on November 22nd. I'm working on two novels now with some novelists, put out two other books beyond the one that I had when I was in Europe, Mystery of the Crystal Skulls Revealed, that came out in actually 1988. But then while I was in Holland, they actually published a new book that I've done, which hasn't really come out in English, called Mystery of the Crystal, no, sorry, Journeys of the Crystal Skull Explorers. So, you know, doing a lot of different things, but the crystal skulls have been, of course, the main focus, because from the first day that I saw my first one back in 1983, which means I've been involved now for over 32 years, I have felt that the crystal skulls are a key and sacred tool that is returning. I know that there are various indigenous tribes and cultures who are familiar with the crystal skulls, including some Native American. The Mayans are the most vocal. I was just in Australia, but I didn't have an opportunity to speak to the tribal people there directly, so I'm not totally sure, you know, what they know about it, but many indigenous people respect what the crystal skulls are about. So I just feel like, you know, I volunteered before I was born, let's say, to be a messenger for them and to share the best information possible. So I try to do it in every form of media that's possible, you know, whether it's on a website, radio show like this, free ebook, Facebook, whatever it is, whatever we can do. You know, we just try to get out information and let people decide for themselves what they think about them. But I can tell you that from the middle part of the 1990s until today, more and more people have decided themselves or have this inner feeling that they want to have a personal crystal skull. And I'm sure since Katrina and I have been together, I would not be surprised if we personally have helped to share into the world maybe like around 800 to 1,000 skulls. I mean, every year, you know, we're sharing more skulls with different people, and it's really remarkable process. Every single one we get eventually finds its true home. So it's been a very interesting experience, and, you know, I'm looking forward to whatever new activities are coming up in the future, which, of course, there always will be new activities coming up.
Outstanding. Do you when are you going to go to Belgium? What month?
In October.
Oh, really?
Probably the second week of October. Ghent, Belgium.
Okay, well, that's not too far from... see, I spent 3 months in Belgium with up with people in the fall of 71. And I got to tell you, you need to rent a car and get over to Wieze, W-I-E-Z-E, I think, Belgium, where they make Wieze pills, beer. And they have the Oktoberfest there. You will never have more fun. 10,000 people in a beer hall at one time. You might want to check the dates, but if you're going to be in Ghent, that's pretty close to, well, you know, it's Belgium's about the size of, I don't know, it's not a very big place, but I think you'll really enjoy it. So there are good people over there.
Yeah, I've been to Belgium before, and the reason I was invited is one of my books was translated into Dutch in 2006. And so this shop, which is sponsoring me, have sold a lot of copies of the books, and they've been following my, Katrina and I, our adventures and so on. And when we released our new free ebook, which just came out this month, and they received a copy, they sent a message to us, and that's how we set up this event. So I'm looking forward to go, and because I know some Dutch, I'll be able to actually speak a little bit to the people there, and they'll understand me.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think you'll have some fun. I now figured out it's been since the spring of 2009. Right after that is the last time we got together on a program.
Okay.
So you know, just whatever you feel inspired to tell us about, please do.
All right. Well, first, what I'd like to do is define crystal skulls, because there may be some people listening that may have heard of them, but they may not know exactly what they are. So that might be a good place to start. So as the name implies, we're speaking about a skull that's made out of, well, originally crystal skulls were quartz crystal skulls. These skulls were discovered near ancient ruins in Mexico and Central America. And, of course, since I got started, there are rumors of crystal skulls being found literally all over the world. And but the modern definition now, because we have modern carvers that are making them, like last night I talked to the owner of one of the largest organizations in China that's probably making thousands and thousands of crystal skulls every year. We actually have, from this group, they gifted us, which is unbelievable. And I'm gonna come back to this skull, but after I go through the definition. But they gifted us a human-sized two-piece rose quartz crystal skull back in 2011. So they're very talented, and they have many crystal skulls available on the internet and eBay. Anyway, to go back to the definition. So the modern definition now of crystal skulls is any type of skull-shaped object that's being created from all different kinds of gemstones, not just quartz crystal. And there are modern carvers now all over the world, but the two main areas that are carving what we call the contemporary modern skulls are in China and in Brazil. There are, of course, older crystal skulls, like I said, that have been found near or within ancient ruins. And so those ones have been given a title of ancient, although I call them very old. And the reason I do this is because over the years, there are so many people claiming that they have ancient skulls because they're under the belief, which I disagree with this, and some of the other work with crystal skulls also are in agreement with this concept, that thinking that only the ancient skulls have any importance for humanity. And an ancient skull would be defined, depending upon which camp of crystal skull teachers and researchers you're with, anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 years in its creation and much, much older. I mean, could be hundreds of thousands of years old, could be millions of years old. Unfortunately, today, especially with quartz crystal, which is an inorganic substance, we do not have the ability to date how old was this made. Carbon-14 dating, which is used in archaeological sites, is for organic substances. It does not work with gemstones, which is an inorganic substance. So a lot of times, in order to understand what the possible age could be of some of the older skulls, we either have to listen to the legends of the people who had it, which could be some of the indigenous people, or sometimes we work with a sensitive or a psychic, and they get impressions because the stones, and especially quartz crystal, record the vibrational frequencies of everything that happens around them. So this is part of the reason why I believe that eventually, if we don't develop some type of technology to be able to read what has been stored in, especially quartz, eventually I think this technology will be developed. And also, of course, listening to the traditions and the legends of the indigenous people, who in some cases are guardians of these skulls, which are considered to be sacred objects. And in some cases, those tribes, like, I can give you an example. I met with a tribe in New Mexico, I don't remember the name of how to pronounce their name. They're a part of the Navajo tribe. They're about 50 miles outside of Albuquerque. Their property actually fits into the shape of a skull. I found this tribe when I was reading the book by Morton and Thomas called Mystery of the Crystal Skull that was published. I think their book came out like in 2005. They worked with the BBC, and they did a special on television in England, and then they came out with a book based on their travels and research. And they interviewed one of the elders from this tribe. And the elder, when I went to meet with the tribe and met with the elder, he did confirm that they do have a crystal skull, but they did not show it to anyone who was outside of their tribe, nor did they bring it together with other crystal skulls because they wanted to keep the purity of this crystal skull. So that was kind of an interesting story, but it kind of points out this idea that, you know, to the indigenous people, who I think of everyone on the planet who has dealt with crystal skulls, they probably understand them the best. They guard them, and they know that the crystal skulls are here to help humanity to create peace. And that's the message, actually, I received in 1983 when I met my first crystal skull, which was made out of amethyst, which is known today as Ami, which was sold in, I believe, 2009, and the guardian has not, the new person who has the skull has not revealed that they have this skull. That was pretty much the message that I received. So coming back to the definition again, so we have the modern skulls that are made. We have skulls that are very, very old, of which we're not sure, you know, where did they come from? How were they made? There are theories, of course, how the skulls were made, but, you know, which one is true? I don't know if there's any way to prove it. Sometimes when I discuss this, you know, publicly on interviews, and sometimes I've been on television documentaries, you know, some people say that Perry, he's insane. He's out of his mind. He doesn't know what he's talking about. It's because there's phenomenon that goes on around these crystal skulls, which I think could cause archaeologists and scientists some problems because it could refute or challenge some of their basic ideas and concepts about what is reality. So anyway, and then there's two other types of crystal skulls that are discussed. One is called an old skull, which means that it was made over 100 years ago to about 1,000 or 2,000 years ago. These skulls I find seem to be more primitive and unsensitive to energy. So what I felt with some of the old skulls is sometimes the energy has been confusing or perverted, if you will. There is stories told that maybe at times some of the indigenous people, when they lost, you know, their way of living peacefully with Mother Earth and their sacred traditions from their ancestors, would use the skulls for sacrifices or things of this nature. And this is really not what crystal skulls are about. They're here as a powerful tool to assist humanity to awaken our spiritual gifts, our soul memories, and to help create peace on the planet. That was basically the message when I met Ami, which was through a picture first before I actually met the skull. Just the picture of it, you know, was the message I received. The last type of crystal skulls, which has come up within the last couple of years since we've been here in the Seattle area, is what I would call an apported crystal skull. And apports are things that have been recorded working with spiritual mediums, where the medium goes into an altered state of consciousness or a trance, and the spirits that are speaking through somehow are able to work with the energies through the medium in order to produce objects that seemingly appear from nowhere. So in our case, we actually have one of these apported crystal skulls that came through a medium that we met here in Seattle in 2011. He invited us in the early part of 2012 to one of the seances he did, which is typical of most seances, was done in total darkness. He was sitting in, I forget the terminology, it was a curtained area that he was inside where we couldn't see the medium. And after he did his session, where Krishna was the minister, he spoke to him, and the minister, he started to have energy protection that to fall down onto the table. Only amount was the fire overlight, stinky light, and this is an important skull that we've actually seen, but we've heard from other people, you know, that other skulls at times have just kind of appeared from nowhere. So these are the four types of crystal skulls, and what's been happening recently, which is been really exciting, is that there are thousands and thousands of people who have felt to get a crystal skull, and we hear from new people almost every week. You can find us on Facebook or through our website. And I see this as a very positive thing, because what's happening is, even though most of these skulls are still
Hey, Mark, his sound is really, really bad. Oh, I think we've almost lost him. Okay.
Yeah, it's breaking up quite a bit.
Yeah, Joshua, I think what we'll do is, I don't even know if you can hear me, but, I'm gonna hang up on you and call you right back. And, because it's just, sometimes this happens with Block Talk. So we'll hang up on you and call you right back. Hang on.
Okay, no problem.
I think we got you back. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you fine. Thank you.
Okay. Very, very good. Okay, good deal.
So what was the last thing you heard me say?
Oh, we lost about the last minute of it. And, yeah, if you care to go back. Sorry about that. I couldn't. Sometimes I can't tell if it's just this my connection I can hear, and it's just a funny thing. But, yeah, if you feel like you need to backtrack a little bit, just feel free.
Okay. So did you hear the part about the aborted crystal skulls?
Oh,
yeah,
no.
You were talking about the thing with the seance and how that the one that you had kind
right.
of popped in. And right around that time, things were starting to garble.
Oh, and I was gonna add that the place I think it's the second or third exit west of Albuquerque. That's Tahajili. Tahajili.
Yeah, that's the name of the tribe.
And
they claim they have a crystal skull and they protect it, and they're also known as the Skull People, is what I read in the book. But what
gotcha.
Was also interesting is when I went to Sedona, which is where I met the person who helps you find guests, and actually Jose Federico Munez, you were talking to him while the conference was going on, who's the Mayan gatekeeper, who is the first Mayan person I've met and I've worked with who actually has his own crystal skull, which I keep forgetting the name of it, but it's quite powerful. At the conference in Sedona, I also met Patricio Dominguez, who's from New Mexico. And he also is a Native American that has a lot of knowledge about crystal skulls. He was also in the book by Morton and Thomas. That's how I knew him. And Spirit brought us together at this conference where there were quite a few elders. So it's pretty interesting. But the one thing that I found very interesting at the conference in Sedona is I was invited as a speaker to talk about crystal skulls. Because I stayed at the base camp where the elders were staying, primarily the younger elders, because the older elders sometimes they needed some help, so they put them in a hotel or a nice place. Is that all the elders were talking with me? And this is probably, an opportunity to speak to the people who are carrying these traditions and sacred knowledge. It was very special, as well as to participate with them in various sacred ceremonies as well, and to have the crystal skulls present. So it was pretty amazing. But what I felt was that while I was at base camp, I was kind of seeing the future of how the world was going to be, which is, total peace and harmony, everyone respecting each other, not trying to convert each other to their religion or their sacred teachings, but sharing their experiences and their knowledge, and each person, saying, that's interesting, and accepting that piece, and then maybe the other person accepts a piece from your experiences and knowledge. So it was pretty powerful. So anyway, I think the listeners now should have a pretty good idea about what the crystal skulls are about, or how they're defined anyway. And, Katrina and I personally, we have over 20 skulls that we work with. 11 of them went with me to Sedona in April, which was during the time of my birthday. I turned 60. And then when I went to Australia last month, again, most of the same skulls came with me, and we were traveling in the eastern part of Australia, and I was hopeful that I would have contact with maybe an elder from, they don't like to be called Aboriginal, they prefer tribal people, but that didn't come up this time. But there might be a trip to go back there the next time, because there, Martin and Thomas, who wrote the book Mystery of the Crystal Skulls, said they talked to a tribal elder who was talking about a crystal skull that was off the coast of Australia underwater. And then Sherry Whitfield, who lives in Tucson, Arizona, and has the ancient skull called Synergy, she talks about that there was another tribe in Australia which actually took care of Synergy for a time, then released it into the world, and eventually it found her, but that it had a twin that tribe still has in Australia. But again, when I was there, I couldn't find out any information related to that. So crystal skulls, I believe, are appearing, you know, all over the world, and possibly could have been created as far back as Atlantis or Lemuria, and then passed on to these indigenous people who saw them as sacred objects and protected them. And now, in modern times, many of them are starting to come out almost magically to assist humanity to help create world peace. That's what I felt from the first day that I saw one, and that inner feeling has never changed. And this is the reason why I guess I've dedicated 32 years of my life and been grateful to meet Katrina, who we work together. So really the Crystal Skull Explorers, as we call ourselves, is Katrina, the Crystal Skulls that we take care of, and myself. It's kind of like, you know, we're all working together and as a team. But the main message that I've been receiving since last year and moving into this year is about co-creation. And almost all the major projects that we're involved in personally have to do with working with other people. The most powerful way that we can create our visions and manifest peace on Earth is through this idea of co-creation, to not look at what things we have that are different, but to find the areas that we agree upon and to combine our talents and skills and work together. There was, back in the 80s, I remember, an organization called Unity Through Diversity, which basically talked about this principle, that they were a networking organization that anyone could join. It was basically spiritually orientated, and that, you know, people would just work on the things that they had in common, or just, you know, to listen to each other, because every person has certain experiences and certain knowledge from their life which can be of value to other people. And so this idea of co-creation is basically, you know, where we're working. And following that up, this is why we supported the Crystal Skull World Day that came out on the internet, which was then created by the Crystal Skull Hearts Council, which was a group of 11 Crystal Skull Guardians. We did a public gathering. They did a meditation, which was shown through a video that everyone could watch. So it was basically the same meditation. And they set up three different times people could do the meditation. Of course, I didn't realize this, but there are 35 time zones all over planet Earth. Like when I was in Australia, I was 17 hours ahead of Seattle. So in other words, I left on April 27th and I arrived on April 29th. But then if the plane that I was supposed to take from Fiji to L.A. had not broken down and I didn't need to stay overnight, when I came back, which was May 29th, I would have arrived on May 29th in the U.S. So anyway, Crystal Skull World Day had three different time periods that people could link up, and I'm sure we had hundreds or thousands of people with the Crystal Skulls that were participating. And then thanks to Jose Federico Munez, the Mayan daykeeper who was a member of the council, he facilitated with other elders that even though they weren't doing the same ceremony as we were, the same meditation, because they didn't have, you know, equipment to see the video, they did a ceremony at the same time with us. So that's going to be coming up again on November 22nd this year. And there is a website which I would recommend that people go to. You do not need a crystal skull to participate. And today, it's at crystalskullworldday.com. So I think it is very important, and again, a very powerful example of this idea of co-creation, which is, you know, what we're seeing all the time now. Almost everything we're doing is with co-creation. So some other thoughts I have related to the crystal skulls.
Oh, and I want to make sure that people understand that was crystalskullworldday.com?
Yes.
That's okay, good deal.
Right,
hey,
go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, Mario, let's check with Mario Atkinson. Mario, have you thought about having a question, anything you wanted to ask Joshua?
Do you do any type of readings with those? Or? or is this?
Yes, we actually do have private sessions where we have the crystal skulls in front of the individual who's doing the session with us, and they do a meditation. They pick which crystal skull resonates for them. My partner,
right,
Katrina, does it, and then I do it.
Outstanding. Sounds like that.
Okay, and how do you set that up? I mean, do you just go to that website that you just gave out, or?
Well, normally what happens for the session is when we're traveling, this is part of the events we offer. And sometimes we've worked with a person with Skype also, where we have pictures online of the crystal skull, and the person selects it, and we bring the crystal skull live with us while we're doing the, you know, session over the internet with the individual.
Fascinating. Yeah, anything
cool.
Anything else?
I guess that'll be it for now.
Okay, yeah, I'm just going to put you on listen mode because of quite a bit of noise there. And if you have any other listeners that would like to talk with Joshua, we've got a little more time. You can call in right now to 347-996-3318 and ask Joshua, you know, whatever you'd like. And in the meantime, Mark, did you have any observations, questions?
Well, I would be interested in, you know, what connections that, you know, there's various stories that connect crystal skulls to other off-Earth locations, and many of them primarily seem to be the Pleiades, and be interested in what information or research he had on that.
Okay. Before I answer your question, Mark, we should also give out our website as well if people are interested to know more about crystal skulls. And that
mm-hmm.
website is very simple. It's crystalskullexplorers.com, crystalskullexplorers.com. I think, Mark, your question leans more toward do the crystal skulls have some type of extraterrestrial connection with them?
Right.
So that's what I'm going to ask. Not just Pleiadian.
Right.
I think there are many different galactic races who are involved with the crystal skulls, and I will give you some examples to explain why I feel that way. There are two crystal skulls that I've personally met which I would say have an extraterrestrial, not only feel to them, but their appearance looks extraterrestrial. One of these crystal skulls is actually called ET. It is a human-sized, smoky quartz crystal, kind of a dark smoky quartz, that was discovered by a family in the early 1900s. They were digging on their property, and their shovel struck the skull. So you can actually see a little damage on the top part of the skull where the shovel struck it. This crystal skull was held by this family, I think, I'm trying to remember, so many years have gone by. I think it was till 1999. I was living in Las Vegas at this time, and I was invited to go to a conference in L.A. by the organizer, who actually had a crystal skull, so he had me come in. And while I was there, my friend Eric, who had a crystal store in Van Nuys, California, said, "I want you to come to my store. I have something important for you to see." So Eric, up to that point in time, I knew of modern carvers who were making crystal skulls. So I figured when I went to a store, I would be seeing one of those. But when I got there, there was this lady there by the name of Yoki van Dieten, who was from Holland. And she was there because Eric was arranging for her to receive this crystal skull, which I'm talking about, which I didn't know that was what was going to happen. When Miss Van Dieten met me, she says, "Oh, yes, I remember you. I have a copy of your book, Mystery of the Crystal Skulls Revealed," which is the first book that I worked on with Bone and Nasserino, that came out in 1989. And according to her, what happened was is that she had seen first another book many years ago which had a picture of the most famous crystal skull, which is known as the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull, named after F.A. Mitchell Hedges, who discovered this crystal skull in Belize in the year of 1927. So when she saw that picture, her inner voice told her one day she would have a skull. Then she moved to Vancouver, Canada, and she went to the spiritual bookstore that's up there. I forget the name of the store. And while she was looking, a book literally fell by itself into her hands. That book was called Mystery of the Crystal Skulls Revealed by Bowen, Nasserino, and Shapiro. So she took it home with her because of the message she received from the other book. But she didn't really look at it for quite a while. Then eventually she moved to Costa Rica. And one day, her inner voice said, you should open the book up to the appendix in the back. And when she did, she found Eric's store listed. And so she called his store and says, because she became interested in crystal skulls and she wanted to have one of these ancient ones. So she calls up his store. She knew that was the store to call and say, do you have any ancient human-sized crystal skulls for sale? And the man, like, literally didn't speak for about 20 seconds and said, lady, I don't know who you are or where you get your information from. But there are no ancient crystal skulls that are available, and if there were, I would know about them. And she said, well, you're going to buy one soon. Here's my number, and you call me. And, of course, he probably totally nuts. But 4 days later, this family who found the skull on their property in Guatemala in the early 1900s, they were desperate for some money, and they contacted him and said, you know, we'll offer our skull if you can help us sell it so we can feed our family. And so he calls her back, and she put a deposit down without even seeing the skull and then arranged to go to meet him. And so it was at that time I was at the conference. I was there. And that's why Eric invited him to meet her, take us to his home. And then he had this crate where the skull was in, set by the family, took it out. So with Miss Van Heaton, I'm looking at the crystal skull, you know, with her. And it definitely had a kind of pointed head, a pointed jaw, overbite of teeth. It just looked alien-like. Then she decided to call it E.T. after she saw it. And then to make a long story short, she takes that skull with her to Australia. In Australia, she has a terrible headache, is diagnosed by doctors there of a large tumor in her head, which I think is heretic from her family. She didn't have insurance, so she went back to Canada that had socialized medicine and had two major brain surgeries, to remove the tumor. And then afterwards, she fully recovered, left the hospital unbelievably in a week. And when she went to recuperate in Switzerland, there was a nurse who was a friend of hers that was looking at E.T., who was with her through this whole time, and said, do you know your skull has a tumor right exactly where her tumor was? So this E.T.-looking skull came into her life in a critical moment when she had this brain tumor removed, and she fully recovered and never had any problem again. And when they x-rayed her skull, they could see that the bone totally healed. Pretty amazing. The other crystal skull that I've seen, which I've already mentioned prior, is called Synergy, which Sherry Whitfield was the guardian of this skull. And there was one time where we visited in the Tucson area. I think it was around, I don't know, maybe 2006 or so. And she was not feeling well, but her ex-husband at the time brought the skull to the hotel and had a chance to really work with it, and it does not also look like a human bone skull. It's much larger. It's elongated in certain areas, and, you know, there is a discussion that possibly the skull could be extraterrestrial. And the same thing, there's another ancient skull that's known by Max, where another friend that I know who saw the skull after it came out, which was probably again, in the 1990s, she
think it's a foregone conclusion, but one of the most popular theories related to Christus God, as far as where did some of them come from, is gifts from the gods. It'd be the way that the Indians might refer to it. And your affinity for the Pleiades. And they, I actually was at a conference where a Mayan priest who was there, two Mayan priests that were there, said that these were the gifts from the gods.
Wow. Yeah, the a friend of mine named Robert Three Eagles told me that one of the reasons why we're having so much climate change and other things that are going on that are unusual is that there were anciently a lot of talismans like this that were buried in certain locations for the express purpose of mitigating bad things that might happen. And and of course, he was speaking of copies of the seals of Solomon. And
right.
He said, "If you if these are disturbed or dug up or moved or whatever, there can be disastrous circumstances." And he self-taught himself in metallurgy and using an old black and white reproduction of one of the seals, made a cast out of a potato, and when he poured the lead, it was cooling. He made a Solomonic seal, and for the next two weeks, it was almost washed off the mountainside that he was living on, and then the only place it was raining in San Pete Valley was right over his house, and so he didn't realize at that point all he needed to do was take a piece of black silk, I think he said, and wrap it up, but he
yeah.
just kind of panicked and destroyed it, and that. You know, and so, you know, these things are important. The ancients put them there for a reason, and they do need to be guarded. But but if anybody else would like to talk with Joshua, call us at 347-996-3318. And, Joshua, we don't want to take too much of your time. If you need to go, let us know. We've really enjoyed visiting with you again. But, you know, if you have more to say, I certainly don't want to discourage you.
No, I always have a lot more to say, so it's no problem. What I'd like to continue to answer Mark's question a little bit more. One of the reasons that one of the major theories about where this cult come from as being gifts from the gods is because of the sophisticated design of some of the ancient skulls. It's difficult to try to come up with how supposedly primitive people like, you know, the Mayans and the Mesoamerican people could have possibly created some of these objects which they had in their possession. So this is part of the reason why an extraterrestrial theory seems to make sense, or the other possibility that we talked about in the first book that we put out, Mystery of the Crystal Skulls Revealed, was a connection with the Hollow Earth, which talks about that there is advanced races of beings that live on the inside surface of the Earth, with the Earth being hollow. And so this also has come up as another possibility where some of these skulls may have come from as well. And in our research that we've done as far as that, okay, so we have these crystal skulls, you know, it's just a rock, or why should it have an effect on people, because this is what we see in our sessions that I talked about that we do, is people are coming in and they're meditating with the crystal skulls we have, and then they report back to us about some kind of life change, or, you know, some type of healing that goes on, or some new psychic or spiritual gifts that manifest. So there's most definitely our energies that are connected to this GOV. And over the years, I don't know if I talked about this the last time, but basically the best way to describe what this energy is and where it comes from is the concept that the skulls are a conduit to allow other cosmic intelligences to work through them, which would be of a dimensional nature, which is kind of linking in to part of what Mark was talking about in his reading. That could it be possible, or let's speculate on this theory then and work it out a little bit more. So let's say, for example, that you're part of an extraterrestrial race or a galactic race, and you're looking at planet Earth, and you're watching the people here and how they're living and everything, and you're thinking, well, you know, we kind of have free will. We can't go in and directly interfere, but what if we were to give them some special type of tools that could help to bring forward the true divinity and inner awareness? Because I'm sure both of you will agree with this comment that who we truly are is divine children of God. There's the spirit, the soul that's inside of us and has connection to amazing knowledge. But when we're born into physical form, there's this memory veil that most of us have, which perhaps over time, as we go on our spiritual process, we begin to remember things. And this is what I believe has been happening to me for many years, is I'm remembering more and more of things from other lifetimes, from lifetimes that maybe were not even on planet, and also as well as having more contact with beings that are always around us. And so, I think, you know, what the crystal skull's primary purpose is right now is to be a catalyst to awaken these inner abilities that are actually abilities we all have by divine right. Regardless of what religion you follow, regardless of what tradition you follow, you know, if you study all the religions and the different indigenous cultures, almost all of them will agree with one simple concept, that there is a creator and everything that exists is part of creator, that each of us is a note in creator's infinite symphony, which means, in truth, we're all brothers and sisters and we're all part of each other. And therefore, we act as a catalyst to help our brothers and sisters learn more about themselves and vice versa. But I really believe that the skulls have this energy that's around them to help with this, but there also is a living consciousness that comes through, because almost every guardian you'll talk to, and this is true of the new skulls or the very old ones, will say, well, I got this skull, and it starts communicating with me. And maybe the communication is telepathic communication. Maybe it's coming through visions. Maybe it's coming through dreams. Maybe it's coming on a feeling level. To give an example of this type of communication, I'd use Katrina myself to portray this. So for myself, if I hear the skull, it's in my thinking voice. And this is also how spirit communicates with me. I'm just sitting there busy doing something or, you know, kind of meditating, not really thinking about anything, and all of a sudden this idea of thought comes in, and it's very definite that it's not coming from the waking consciousness, me. It's an inspiration, or, you know, it's a communication from some other living consciousness. And it comes in my thinking voice, whereas for Katrina, when our skulls talk to her, she actually hears a voice speaking to her, and how she knows which skull it is because the voice is different for each skull that we have. Whereas for me, I can tell by how I feel the message. I can tell, you know, if it's coming from, let's say, the crystal skull that we have known as Portal de Luz, Portal of Light, who's been with me since 1999. When he's talking, you know, it's like there's a certain personality he has. It's very clear that he's talking versus one of the other skulls we have, which I mentioned before, but I didn't tell her story yet, Rosalita, which was the skull we were gifted from these Chinese carvers, which is a human-sized crystal skull, and the lower jaw is separate from the top part, which is similar to how the Mitchell Hedges skull is. when that's called communicating, she, and I get the sensing of a feminine presence, doesn't talk very much and is more as sending like a loving or a healing energy. We hadn't taken her outside very much, so we just took her over by Puget Sound, which is a pretty large body of water not too far from our house. We just took her the last 2 weekends, and, you know, she was talking to Katrina and thanking her so much. And especially also yesterday we put her actually into the water, and she appreciated that as well. So this concept of a living consciousness speaking through the skull, having communication with their guardians, is the only way that I can explain who's talking to people, why are they having a conversation with these inanimate objects. And if that is true, then I think, you know, this was a plan that Spirit talked about as a way to share knowledge and information with people while we're here in physical form. So, you know, a lot of times when I'm writing, I may take one of the crystal skulls that we have and have it around me to help create an environment around me that's conducive, you know, to be more open to the creative writing. So this is another aspect of the crystal skulls that we share with people. And this consciousness is coming through the skulls, whether it's a new one that's been made recently or one that's extremely old. Now, interesting story, since the program kind of shares, you know, more about indigenous legends and stories and so on, is what happened when Rosalita was brought to the Star Knowledge Conference in 2011. Of course, the Star Knowledge Conference has been done by a chief of the Dakota named Standing Elk. He goes by Golden Light Eagle now, but I know him as Standing Elk. I just saw him in Sedona at this Elders Conference, and actually, it was interesting. He was late, so the people from the conference saw I was there, and I was one of the speakers, so I was kind of talking for a little while till he showed up. And, of course, we recognized each other. And he had Yoki Van Degen come first to ET, so that was pretty interesting. And then we were at the conference with Rosalita in 2011. So I'm sure, Blue Otter, you know about the 13 grandmothers who have come together and are doing a lot of work for peace.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, what's her name? Grandmother Agnes, who's in Oregon. She was at this conference. She was sitting in her wheelchair in the front row. And after I had talked, I said, do we have any questions? And so she raised her hand, and she said, there is a crystal skull on the stage, because I was talking from the stage, which is behind the podium, and it's been speaking to me. And this was Rosalita. Now, Rosalita had just come into our hands probably about, I would say, 2 weeks before that conference. We had just received her from China. She was actually in Alaska delayed because they didn't know what she was, and we had to explain to her it was a crystal skull. And on the very day we were leaving for this coast-to-coast trip, which included going to the conference, which was by sea, St. Louis, it was by the, what's the name of those mounds that's by St. Louis? I can't remember them. They did the conference by these Indian mounds that are by there.
Frank Park.
What is it?
Ozarks?
No.
No.
It's
no.
The mounds.
Cahokia.
Cahokia,
that's right.
Cahokia.
Oh.
When I turned 60, my memory is starting to leave me, so I apologize for that. But, yeah, the Cahokia Mound. So we actually, you know, took our skulls there, and we did some ceremony. And actually, what's the name of Hunspet's men also in 2011, he was traveling from New York to L.A., and he was going with crystal skulls to different sites, like he went to Serpent Mound in Ohio. He went to Cahokia. So he had just left Cahokia. We met him in Kansas, and then we were heading that way. So it was kind of interesting. He did a ceremony there, and then we came and did a ceremony. So anyway, getting back to Grandmother Agnes, so I knew that I needed to share Rosalita with her and be really careful because it's two separate pieces. You don't want the top piece bouncing up and down on the lower jaw. So I carefully carried this 13-pound skull over to Grandma Agnes, and I put it into her lap, and I forgot what message she told me that Rosalita was speaking to her, but she also received a tremendous heat and a healing from the skull. So this was kind of interesting. So Rosalita at this conference kept kind of, you know, nudging me to say, could you present me to this elder or that elder? Unfortunately, because Katrina didn't accompany me to the Sedona conference, I wasn't able to take Rosalita with me, although Portal de Luz was definitely with me. And I remember when I had taken him out, I know there were two elders who came up and said, tell me, what is this about? They could actually feel the energy coming from Portal de Luz. Now, Portal de Luz also, one time when I was in Holland, and I guess for about 3 years, there was a Mayan elder that came to Holland and was present because they had a movie they were showing about the Mayan calendar of 2012. It was about 10 years before 2012. It was in 2001 or 2002. And so I brought Portal de Luz, who was with me, to share with the Mayan elder. And when the Mayan elder came out, Portal de Luz said to me, I don't want you to say anything to the elder. Just leave me on the table and let this elder approach me and decide whatever the elder wants to do. You know, if he wants to see me or wants to say something or whatever. So now Portal de Luz was created, I believe, in, 1998 by a well-known carver, Brazilian carver named Leandro de Souza. And I'd actually been to Leandro's in Brazil where he carved the skull. And we had conversation and, you know, he says to people that I basically helped them to understand the crystal skulls. I was the first person that he talked to who was knowledgeable. So when this elder came, and I'm not going to say his name because I don't want to embarrass him from the experience that happened, he looked at the skull and then he had a person who was able to translate in Spanish and said, this is a Mayan crystal skull, one of our ancient skulls, and you need to give him back. And I said, Grandfather, I'm sorry, but I have been to the carver who made this skull in Brazil, who acknowledged that he was the carver of this skull, and I know for a fact that this is not one of the old skulls that the Mayan have had. And he didn't believe me. And I had to take out another skull that I had at this time, which was also made by Leandro, and then he was quiet. So the reason I tell this story is that Portal de Luz, as a modern-made skull, able in the travels that we did, going to different sacred sites and meeting some of the other ancient skulls, was able to start to receive the energy like the older skulls have. And because of the energy that Portal de Luz had, the Mayan elder thought he was one of theirs. Now, Portal de Luz was initiated in Sedona. That's where I received him, in a Mayan ceremony that was done when the sun came out, and he was sitting next to the crystal skull ET, which we do believe that the Mayans did have this crystal skull at some point, because where it was found in Guatemala under the ground. So it's kind of an interesting story, but it also could have something to do with how Portal de Luz was activated when he first came in Sedona. He went to the sacred energy vortexes that were there. He was around the older skulls. He was part of the sunrise ceremony, the priest of this elder. So it could just be, you know, that this crystal became activated and was open to Mayan's hand. So it's very interesting. But this idea of an intelligence working through the skulls is the best way to explain the experience that many guardians are having with them, having conversations and coming up with a name, and even having this intelligence or the skull making suggestions how the guardian should work with the skulls and use them, or, you know, even inspire the guardians for ceremonies or taking their skulls to sacred sites to try to reactivate those sites. And then there's one other story that links into what you were talking about, Blue Otter. It was, again, with a representative of a Mayan he said this to me. He said that some of these old skulls were scattered around the world, but the Mayans are trying to get them back because there are pyramids that are connected to the crystal skulls where these skulls need to sit to help with balancing the energy of Mother Earth. So definitely I would agree with the statement that the crystal skulls are one of these tools, that they come from Mother Earth and they're here to help to balance the energy of the Mother Earth, which is why I think, you know, a lot of people are working with skulls in ceremonies, and like the World Peace Meditation we do every month, or what's going to happen on Crystal Skull World Day. So I would say this is a very, very important aspect of the crystal skulls, which those of us who have been guardians of crystal skulls for several years, when we discuss this, our experiences are almost identical and the same. So it's not something that's a fantasy or we're crazy. It's actually happening to a lot of people right now. So I hope that makes some sense. So any other questions either of you might have or any of your listeners?
Well, that, what you just said there reminds me, because I think the Hedges skull that you mentioned earlier that was on the front cover, I think, in one of your books.
Yes.
I think if I remember the story right, that was his daughter, I think, was lowered in some kind of pyramid or temple and found it down inside there, right?
Yep. She climbed the pyramid and wasn't supposed to because there was damage to it, like this ancient city called Lubuntun that they were in and exploring. It looked like an earthquake hit it, and she saw something reflecting sunlight from a crack in the pyramid, and that's the reason why they lifted the stones to lower her in a few weeks later. And she brought out the top part of this two-piece skull, and then in the temple area about 6 weeks later, they found the lower jaw. But if you look closely, if you've ever seen the Mitchell Hedges skull, or you look closely, like we have a video where I interviewed the current guardian's name is Bill Holman, when Anna Mitchell Hedges, that was the daughter of F.A. Mitchell Hedges, passed away in 2007, I believe. Her friend Bill Holman became the guardian of the skull. And when I interview him, if you look at the video where he's showing the skull, you'll see there's a fairly sizable gap between the upper jaw and the lower jaw. And there is some speculation that this jaw may actually not be the jaw that belongs to that top part. There actually may be another jaw. But for the moment, you know, it's pretty spectacular. And of all the crystal skulls that I've ever seen, and I've seen quite a few now, the Mitchell Hedges skull is the one that has affected me the most. You know, I feel a very strong connection with it. I remember when I saw it the first time at this conference in Dallas, Anna Mitchell Hedges, you know, I'm just standing looking at it like other people around, asked me, could you sit behind her and watch the skull for me? So I felt like the crystal skull was working through her to say, hey, another old friend who I recognize from times past, I think in Atlantis, I knew this crystal skull. But, you know, everybody has their own crystal skulls they meet, which are, let's say, their favorites or the ones that they have the strongest affinity for. I know I've met some people who didn't feel a strong connection with Mitchell Lewis, but maybe felt a connection with Synergy or with E.T. or me. So I would say, you know, these are some of the most well-known crystal skulls right now, and some of the guardians who help these owners go continuing, you know, to give people an opportunity. The difference in the type of presentation which I wind up doing is that I try to focus on all the skulls. I just don't focus on the personal ones we have. Of course, you know, you've already heard a couple of stories that have happened with our skulls, and I'm sure we're going to have more interesting stories and experiences that will come up with them. But I really try to talk about all of them, and especially when I have a workshop where I have 5 or 6 hours to get pretty deep into it. Also talking about some research we did with the energy of the skulls, too, in the past, using different electronic devices. So just, you know, really trying to understand why they're here and why they're changing the lives of so many people. You know, obviously, there wouldn't be all these skulls being carved if there weren't all these people who wanted to have one. And obviously, there wouldn't be all these people wanting to have one if the skulls were not having a positive effect upon their lives. So it's been very interesting over the years.
Well, if you missed me for a few minutes, it's because I got knocked offline.
Oh. Okay. Well, I've had a radio show on Blog Talk too, so I know how this goes.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth? Well, I think we've probably done a good job tonight, and let's not wait so long to get together again.
Yeah, anytime. You know, and I'm not just focusing on crystal skulls. I've been doing a lot of study into the paranormal, and actually for the first time when I did these workshops in Australia, because I was able to visit four different locations, I took a segment to talk about some of the new information that I've been discovering between going to the library and finding amazing books, as well as some different personal experiences that have been happening. So maybe we can cover the next time a little more on the paranormal side, which, of course, is the only way to understand the crystal skulls anyway. If you just look at them as a stone, as a physical object, you won't understand why people are having these amazing experiences around them, why there's an incredible energy, electromagnetic energy that emanates from them. So it's pretty interesting. But
yeah, let's do that. I'll talk with Mac Boogaloo and we'll get you scheduled and we'll go more into the paranormal things. And by the way, folks, if anybody out there is interested in cancer treatment, I want to let you know that the principal chief of the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, Charles L. Rogers, M.D., has recently opened up his practice in the United States through, now this is a guy who practiced in Mexico for over 30 years. And if you'd like to know more, you can go to CherokeeMedicineMan.com. He's using a little-known law that allows Americans to, if there's something that they can get outside the U.S. to save their life, arrangements can be made. And well, after he opened up the practice here through telemedicine, one of our first patients, the radiologist, informed him that he had uncountable bone metastasis. And Dr. Rogers worked with the American oncologist, and after 5 weeks, more imaging was done. And the radiologist was shocked. He said their cancer was not only gone, but the bone had mostly grown back. And he says, whatever you do, do what Dr. Rogers said to do. So we want to invite everybody to check out CherokeeMedicineMan.com. And thank you so much for being on the show, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay.
Great.
All right. Good night, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Friends, this is your co-host, Will Blue Otter. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Blue Otter, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
So that I may remember.